Welcome back. American warfare has changed since 9/11. We do have boots on the ground, and we know it was Navy SEAL Team 6 that killed Osama bin Laden. But as we've talked about before on this show, the U.S. is increasingly using drones to target terrorists, and maybe more significantly, acknowledging it uses drones. A series in the Washington Post this week says the Obama administration is preparing to keep its drone program going for another decade, and reporter Greg Miller is with us to talk about it. Greg, you say officials are designing a new blueprint for hunting down terrorists, and that it's a database designed to go beyond existing kill lists. It's called the Disposition Matrix, which sounds a little sci-fi. What does that mean?
Disposition means the disposition of terrorism suspects. That can mean drone strikes. It can mean arrests, apprehensions.
In other words, how to dispose of them.
Exactly.
It's that explicit. Okay.
Exactly. The Disposition Matrix is an attempt to sort of try to map out the contingencies of counterterrorism going forward. We've had drone campaigns now for a number of years in Pakistan and in Yemen. But the changes to Al-Qaeda have raised concerns that, you know, the next threat might not surface in these places that the United States has been patrolling with armed drones. So the Disposition Matrix is an attempt to map that out. If a suspect surfaces in Saudi Arabia, what would you do? If that suspect then gets on a ship to go to Somalia, what would you do? Who could you turn to? Who are our friendly governments in that area who could apprehend a suspect for us or carry out some sort of strike? So it's trying to force the government and its counterterrorism institutions into making more specific plans about the terrorist suspects that it is trying to catch.
Could you give us an example of how this has been used with a specific target, a specific person?
Last year, there was an Al-Qaeda suspect named Warsami who was captured and held aboard a U.S. naval ship off the coast of Yemen for a couple months before being brought to the United States to face criminal charges. This was somebody who departed Yemen, caught at sea, on his way to Somalia. The Disposition Matrix was made to map out contingencies for the capture of someone like Warsami. So if he had been in Yemen and they'd had an ability to strike him with an armed drone, they might have. Once he was aboard a ship, that required a plan B.
Presumably, the U.S. has always had kill lists, you know, lists of people it would really like to eliminate. How is this different from the type of lists that used to exist?
The U.S. has not always had kill lists. In the years leading up to the 9/11 attacks, the United States had a number of opportunities to target Osama bin Laden, for example, and passed on several of them. It took one shot in 1998 with some cruise missiles that missed, but the United States generally recoiled at the idea of assassinations or targeted killings. But now the Obama administration has taken measures to institutionalize the process, the weapons, and the very decision-making approach for putting names on kill lists.
You say there haven't been kill lists in the past, but do you really not believe that even quietly the government might have had certain people that it really was hoping it could find ways to get rid of?
Well, I think obviously there had been a history of assassination attempts by the CIA involving Fidel Castro, for example, or in other cases. You know, the CIA has also a long history of being linked with proxy groups, militias that were fighting governments in Central America, for example. But the idea of carrying out targeted killings and that the President of the United States would be routinely involved in the decisions of adding names of people overseas to a list of terrorist suspects that the United States is actively seeking to kill is a very new phenomenon.
So we may have had other people do our dirty work in a sense in the past, but now we have a case of, for example, Anwar al-Awlaki, where a missile fired by a drone operated by the CIA killed him. Is that the difference?
That's right. I mean, in last year, you had not only al-Awlaki, who was a U.S. citizen, killed by a drone strike in Yemen, but 2 weeks later, his 16-year-old son was killed. And Alaki's 16-year-old son was collateral damage. Here was a U.S. citizen who had not been accused of being part of al-Qaeda or tied to any al-Qaeda-related plots, but was close enough to targets that he ended up dead as well.
So where does that mean we stand on the debate over whether or not drone strikes are legal and ethical?
Those two strikes in particular are under legal challenge. You know, the ACLU and other organizations have argued there was no due process in those killings, that the United States government does not have the authority to assassinate or kill its own citizens overseas without the involvement of anyone but the executive branch. And there are others who would argue that the drone campaign itself more broadly, even when it's targeting Al-Qaeda suspects, that the legal foundations are increasingly tenuous as we get farther and farther away from the 9/11 attacks.
Greg, on the point of how much the administration acknowledges this, you have some audio on the Washington Post website, and we'll have links to all of this at hereandnow.org. But let's listen to some of that. This is President Obama's top counterterrorism official, John Brennan.
In full accordance with the law, and in order to prevent terrorist attacks on the United States, the United States government conducts targeted strikes against specific Al-Qaeda terrorists, sometimes using remotely piloted aircraft, often referred to publicly as drones.
That Brennan appearance, that was a breakthrough moment. I mean, that was the first formal acknowledgement by the government that this campaign even exists. I mean, it's a very limited exposure. I mean, he's not talking about the CIA's role in this or the role of the Joint Special Operations Command. He's not describing the criteria by which these decisions are made, but it is a measure of transparency.
You mentioned the CIA, and again, it was the CIA that operated that drone that killed al-Awlaki. So it seems that there's a blurring of lines between the CIA intelligence operation and military operations. Do you think it's blurring?
It's completely blurring. That strike you mentioned against Anwar al-Awlaki is a perfect example because it involved a group of drones, four drones, some of which were operated by the Joint Special Operations Command and came from a base in Djibouti. A couple of them came from a secret CIA base in the Arabian Peninsula. They all converged over al-Awlaki, but it was so unclear in the early aftermath of that strike who had pulled the trigger that U.S. officials couldn't say whether it was a military or a CIA strike. And when you look at the leadership ranks of these organizations now, it's a complete blur. So you have former CIA director is now head of the Pentagon. You have one of the most decorated U.S. military officers of his generation now the head of the CIA in David Petraeus.
And it's that Joint Operating Command you just mentioned that you write has a new secret terrorism targeting center right across the Potomac, just a 15-minute commute from the White House. What's the advantage of being so close?
This is the group that carried out the raid that killed Osama bin Laden last year in Pakistan. Highly secretive, highly capable U.S. military organization. Most of the time in its history, its targeting cells have been where its missions are, in Iraq, for instance, or in Afghanistan. But increasingly, it is used in kill operations against al-Qaeda. And those decisions are not made overseas. Those decisions on who to add to target lists are made in Washington. So JSOC, as it's known, has taken an extraordinary step and created a targeting cell in Northern Virginia, a very short distance from the White House, just so that there would be more directly involved in that decision-making process.
Greg Miller is a reporter for The Washington Post. We'll link you to the paper's special series this week called The Permanent War at hereandnow.org. Greg, thanks for talking with us.
Happy to do it.
By the way, at hereandnow.org, you can read about the British military drone program in a story by our former colleague, Michael Goldfarb. Before we go today, actor John Hawkes talks about playing a paralyzed man in the new movie, The Sessions. You're listening to Here and Now.